It's good to be here this morning. I know that a lot of times you don't see Kristen and I a lot. Last week we were in Indianapolis, and then this whole past week I was in Dallas, Texas. So I'm a man of travel, but whenever I'm back home, it's good. Got a call yesterday morning from Dave saying that our games were canceled. To our boys, that's a disappointment to me. I'm like, yes. It's one step closer for me to retirement coaching, less enough to be there. I get excited. I know for Hayes, he's not feeling good, so that was kind of a benefit that he didn't have to get out yesterday. So it's just kind of funny. If I'd been in high school and the game had been canceled, I'd been bummed. Now I'm like 8:30 day of call. I'm like, yes, we don't have a game. So with that being said, they all say I would like to speak. And I'm like, sure, I'd love to speak. So this morning's actually something that did come over the last second, but it's something that's been on my mind. I want you to think about this. I'm going to give you a little intro story and we'll get into the basics of the lesson. Do we build things up in our minds before they happen? I'm really notorious for that. I'll get to something. But I got to share a story back. Only once, the only time I've been skiing. I've done it once, and I'm not saying I want to never go again, but it's quite an experience. We went up to Perfect North. It's one of those ones where you pay a certain amount of money and you're going to ski from some odd hour to some odd hours overnight. I remember that. I can remember all the people on the trip. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I can't do this. There's no way I can ski. So in my mind, I'm going to go to the bunny slopes. I'm going to hang out there a whole day. Be fine. I paid extra money to actually go tubing for 2 hours. So I was like, I can just survive the tubing, ski for a little bit, or attempt to ski, go in there, drink some hot chocolate, the warm chalet thingy, then go do my tubing, which I'm looking forward to, I'd be fine. Well, just give me something that built up in my mind. I'm thinking, there's no way. I can't ice skate. Anybody here like ice skating? I can't do it. I get out there, and I finally get going, I'm fine, but it blows my mind how hockey players play hockey. I just don't see how those two little blades of metal, and they run up and down the ice as fast as they can. When I go ice skating, for the first 20 minutes, I'm like a hockey player because I'm body checking somebody into the wall because they're by the wall, and I'm going to hit the wall, so I just slam into them. And it's a great way to say, oh, I'm sorry, you run into some lady and her kid and knock his kid down. It's kind of embarrassing. Or you fall down and the kid skates backwards besides him laughing. So we get in there to ski, and I'll never forget this because everybody's excited. I guess I felt so proud of everybody at the time because they're all like, yeah. And I look at the ski poles, and I never understood them. They're longer than I am. If you stand them up, they're like, hold on, man. I stick them on my feet. I'm like, this is not going to work. And I'll never forget, turn out the door, and everybody's like, it is literally like an incline from here to here. It's not that slow. And I can't get up it. I'm like, what am I going to do? I mean, this is not even the start of a hill. I'm like, and so I get up there and I think, okay. And I get in, there's a little, I never forget, there's this little hand around. I think there's this place where I don't know what it is. I got to work my way up. And so, first thing is you go to the bunny slopes. You're going to have training. Well, you don't need to do training, or it's not for another hour. So let's just go ride the bunny slope without the training. Awesome idea. So we go over there. And I know I've told this story to people before, but I never understood why the bunny slope would never ride a ski lift up to the bunny slope. I was like, man, that's not go up. So I'll never forget, my best friend and I, Mike, were standing there, and it's like, here comes the ski lift. And if you've ever done it, and I think I rode the ski lift like twice that whole day, because this is traumatizing in life. You get out there, it's a long night, we stood there like 20 minutes waiting on the stupid thing to take people to the top. So it's more time in my mind to build up, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And so Mike and I slide over. Now remember, this is a guy who can't get up a slope outside the door. And I was like, up. And I'm like, Mike, I'm not going to make it. Mike, I'm not going to make it. And the thing doesn't stop. It's not like a roller coaster where it rolls up and then it stops and you get on and they lock you in and then sit down. It's like a continuous motion. And so I get up and I'm like, Mike, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. Ooh, it hits me. And it knocks me down. So then I have to stop the whole feeling. It's embarrassing. I get up. So we get to the top. And I'm thinking, man, I look back down. Now, this is no bunny slope, but it's not like a black diamond. I didn't make that mistake. And I look back, and I think, oh my goodness, how am I going to get on this hill? Well, you got those people in life, and they said, oh well. And so Mike turns, puts his pole down, and just, he's got never skied before. He takes off like he's like the downhill skier. Drops down like this, puts his ball behind. I'm like, whoa! I'll tell you what happened to Memphis for this time later. I get down to the bottom of the hill and I thought, man, that was rough. The rest of the day, as time went on, what was in my mind was not as bad as I thought. I eventually got to ski. Matter of fact, I got so confident about my skiing that I told Marie to come up and ride this one slope with us. And I thought, oh, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And then she had the problems I did. So I just learned in my mind is that we build things up. If we don't try, we won't. So let me get that to where I am. Fast forward however long ago that is to now. If you don't know this, you probably heard this, but I recently took a job promotion at UMBs. My new title is Director of Walk for Water, which sounds great, but there's a little difference between where I was at and where I'm at now. And one of those things is, I've got to be the one who calls some of the leaders and say, hey, we'd love to do a walk with you, or no, we would like to do a walk with you. See, in my mind, my biggest thing is the word no. I can build up in my mind, if I've got to pick up the phone and call somebody and tell them that we can't do it, I build up in my mind the reaction. I know in my mind what's going to happen. I'm going to call, and I'm going to have to tell them, no, you know, this is not going to work, or maybe next year, or da-da-da, and all I can think is the worst. They're going to yell at me through the phone. They're going to reach for that phone line, they're going to smack me in the face, and they're going to, it builds up in my mind. So much of paralyzing me. I build stuff in my mind so much that it paralyzes me. Now that's a lot. I think that doesn't make sense, Sean. You're not going like to talk to people. So what makes you so scared of the word no? See, my strength is being outgoing. I love to talk to people, but I don't like confrontation. It's a big difference. I'll never forget a couple of weeks ago, Dave was up here, and we had the lady standing in the side behind us, and something went down, and he had to confront her, and he's like, I hate confrontation. Dave can talk to anybody, can't he? But even he said, I don't want to go in there and confront us. I kind of have to, because either confront that situation or confront a situation at home. So I think he chose the better of the two. He said, I'll confront this one. But for me, it's the same way. I can talk to anybody. But see, my biggest strength is for someone to open the door, and then for me to take over. It's almost like somebody says, hey, Sean, I talked to so-and-so. They're interested in the water. We think it's a great fit. All you need to do is set it up. Set the walk for water. The door has been opened. Now I can come in. I can do my strength. The bad part for me is that you said, Sean, I want you to take the church directory, and I want you to just go down to this and start calling churches and ask them to participate in a walk for water. You see the difference? There's a big difference, isn't there? One's a handoff call, and one is a cold call. And so for me, I can let that traumatize. So I just spent a week in Dallas, and we're looking at our walks this year, and me, I'm like, man, I don't have time to do. Let's just do 60 walks. Who cares if I don't have a light? I'll just do walks all the time, because then I don't have to let anybody know and take away from their excitement. Well, the very first situation, one of the walks we were looking at trying to divert not to do this year, thank you, guess what? Watson Dallas emailed me. He says, hey, Sean, excited about doing a walk for water this year. Looking to schedule in April. Uh-oh. This means I'm going to have to do it. So I proceed with my walk to go through. And he does it so easy. He's like, well, here we say, the next thing, everything's good. I'm like, in my mind, I'm thinking, I've got to tell this guy, well, maybe not a walk this year, maybe next year. I've got to. And so my fear is not the word no. I've dug deeper than that. My fear is not the word no. My fear is that they will think less of me if I don't give them the answer they want. How many of us in here struggle with being people pleasers? It's not necessarily no that bothers me. If you say no, my thing is if you say no, then you're like, I can't believe he did that. He's a horrible person. Or, oh my goodness. And so in my mind, I built up this traumatizing fear so much that it paralyzes me. But you know what? It's like a skiing story. I do it, and 99.9% of the time, because that ski story was not perfectly the greatest thing. I didn't walk away like a professional skier that day. I had a lot of ups and downs, literally. but I made it through it. And every time in my life when I've had to say, okay, I've got to confront something, I've made it through it. So my question to you this morning is, what what in your life do you build up so much that it hinders you from doing it? What is it, the situation in your life, that you let so much take over your mind that you've already come to a foregone conclusion that it's the doom and gloom, or it's not going to happen if you don't try? And so we're going to look at the story of the Bible. I don't know this guy, other than what's in the scripture, so I can't tell you what was in his mind. But we're going to look at the story of Moses, because I think Moses is like me in a lot of ways. We all know the story, but if you go ahead and turn to Exodus chapter 3, we'll look at some examples, because God came to Moses, said, just like my boss came to me and said, here's what you got to do. You got to go confront somebody, right? He met at the burning bush, and the whole story, and he's going to make him set up a confrontation, right? God told Moses to go to who? Pharaoh. That wasn't a, hey, buddy, you must sit down and have coffee, got a drink, was it? Or it was a confrontation. And so Moses comes back with five excuses. Five things in his mind he's already built up in so much that he's got the quick answers to God. And we're going to look at those five things, and that's going to be our end of the story. I don't know what Moses was saying. It could be a lot deeper. He might have to be like Sean. But we can take this and we can apply for it. So turn to Exodus chapter 3, and the first 9-10 verses are covering the burning bush, but let's get into where he actually starts kind of questioning God back. So verse 11 of chapter 3 is Moses responding to God after he's called him out to do this. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? So Moses first thinks that, me? I mean, really, me? I mean, don't you have something better? Who am I? Am I even qualified for this? Is this, you know, automatically has come back with doubt, right? It always shows that Moses is doubt, self-image. It's my mind. God then in verse 12 says his response. And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. God says, look, I will be with you. I stop and I take that back into my mind. I say, okay, Sean, if I'm going to do something, I know the people that are asking me to do it are going to have my back. I know my boss is going to have my back. He's not going to fire me if I butcher the call and tell the guy I can't go walk. The guy says, I hate Human Hands International. He's going to fire me. I know my boss is going to be right there beside me, but I still have fear. Moses says it to God, and God comes back and says, look, I'll be right there with you. But I was kind of at the end of the story, doesn't it? God was like, oh, okay, God, you're with me. All right, let's go, doesn't it? Just like I do a lot of times. The next thing is, okay, you give me that, but, so verse 13 says, Moses' second excuse. Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell him? We all know God then comes back and says, right in verse 14 and 15, he says, God says to Moses, I am who I am. Very famous statement we've all heard. Very powerful statement. I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. All right. God says, now I'm with you, and you can tell I sent you. I am is the one who sent you. Oh, okay. Moses is like, all right, I'm ready to go, right? Moses, just like Sean. In a lot of ways. Oh, but here's the next excuse. Because if I'm thinking Moses like me, I've already thought every situation out. And so it really frustrates me when somebody says, well, here's what you do. Well, they do that, they just make it sound so easy. I can see Moses and God, and I understand it's Moses with God, and thinking, how can you question God? But really, in our lives, don't we battle back and forth with things? God, you're making this sound so easy, but do you not understand? I don't want to do this. Is there another way? Is there another person? Is there something else? You're God. So they come back, and so his third excuse is actually going to be down in verse, chapter 4, verse 1. You'll go ahead and flip over there. Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you?'" So God comes back with this one. He answers them. Verse 2 through 9. "Then the Lord said to him, 'What is that in your hand?' 'A staff,' he replied. 'The Lord said, throw it on the ground.' Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, 'Reach out your hand and take it by the tail.' So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake and turned it back into a staff in his hand. 'This,' said the Lord, 'is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, will appear to you.' Then the Lord said, 'Put your hand inside your cloak.' So Moses put his hand inside his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow. 'Now put it back into your cloak,' he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored, like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, 'If they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground.' Now God said, 'I will show you, Moses.' But Moses is just like Sean. 'That's great. You make it look so simple, God. Yeah, I understand. I believe that. But I don't want to do this. Is there some other solution? I'm not the one.' What is dictating his problem for Moses? He is afraid to confront. Is there somebody else? I look at so many situations, and it was just like I was sitting in Dallas in the office of HHI down there, and I thought, yeah, that's great. Well, then you do it. If it's so easy, why am I the one that has to do it? Continues on, because Moses is just like Sean. He's got 5,000 excuses. Let's go to the fourth excuse. Let's skip down to verse 10. Or actually, read 10. We're already at 9. Moses said to the Lord, "Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent. Neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and of tongue." Great, great excuse. This one's God. This one's it. God, you don't want to use me. I'll butcher your words. Yeah, you might put somebody out there more like it. And this answer right here is just like, how do you even do this? God comes back, God being God, obviously only God can answer like this. The Lord said to him, "Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord?" We'll come to the point in a second when I'm getting that. But let's go to the fifth one. Verse 13. But Moses said, "Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else." Let's just get to the point. Send someone else. God comes back and says, "Then the Lord's anger burned." So I imagine this was not a soft thing. This is like my boss saying, "Look, do it or you're fired." Burning his nose, he said, "What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak, and I will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth, and as you were God to him." That resonates, that little interaction there in those two chapters right there resonates so much in my mind. Because what crippled me the most is thinking, I know the result. I know how it's going to go, so why even do it? I can see God pushing me, stretching me in my life and saying, "You need to grow, just like I have to grow in my work." And I have to stretch. But God's proven time and time and time throughout history, and even beyond Moses. I mean, Moses hasn't had as much history as we do to know how God worked. But you think about it. God says, "Look, I've got this. And you're the one I want." "Yeah, I can get whoever I want. I can do it myself," God says. Some people say, did God use Moses as an animal because maybe he wasn't the perfect fit, and God can use anyone to accomplish it? Or was Moses the right job, right guy for the right job? He didn't see it. However, you want to take that, you can apply that two ways. Maybe you're not the right person, but God's using you in that situation. Or maybe you're the perfect fit, and God needs you in that situation. But either way, God says you got to grow yourself, you got to stretch yourself, because I've outlined you. And I think about that so much in my life, because so many times is I don't want to do something, not because I don't think it's right, not because I don't think it's effective, but because I don't want to be the one to be rejected. I don't want someone to think less of me. Now, thankfully, my job is not to go out and tell a Pharaoh to get his act right and let the Israelites go. Thankfully, mine is just a one-little interaction. So in the grand scheme of things, if somebody doesn't want to go walk the water, life goes on. Moses is going to a different situation. But the great thing about this is such a parallel in life. What is it that we take in our mind and we've built up so much that it hinders us from doing what we need to do? For a lot of us, maybe not in this room, but a lot of people in this world, I think, we build up what it means to be in a relationship with God. A lot of people build this up and think, I just can't do that. I'm not the right fit to be in a relationship with God. I'm this, I'm that. And they come back and say, well, this, and they come back excuse after excuse. We're good at coming up with excuses because a lot of times we want what makes us comfortable, right? Do you really grow if you stay in your comfort zone? How many of you here have stayed in your comfort zone all your life and you feel like you've grown? How many of you here would think, you know what? In times of my life, I had to step outside of my comfort zone, and because I did that, look at where I'm at today. I'd say that nobody here would say they never stepped outside their comfort zone. Either you did it by choice or you're forced to, because you stepped outside your comfort zone. Maybe it was the very first time you got up here to speak. Maybe it was the very first time you were asked to lead a prayer. Maybe it was the first time you got thrown into teaching a class for you, which is very common. If you meet Miss Judy and you're not teaching class within a couple of weeks, how many times have you been like, I can't do that, but then you do it and you realize, hey, my message is simple this morning. I am more talking to myself because I'm going through something where I'm stretching. I know that the end result's going to be okay. I know that when I make these calls, I know that I'm going to do my job to the best of my ability, it's going to be good. I know that. But I'm going to spend hours upon hours and hours in my mind wearing myself out, going back and forth making that scenario. I just need to get out of here, put those two long poles on my feet, fall on my face about 40 times, be laughed at by not just the group of Riverdale, but by the whole Perfect North Ski Resort. And by the end of the night, I'm going to look back and say, my memory is going to change my life. And I don't regret what I'm going to do this day. It's a great thing. I had a good time. Or, can I sit here in my mind and let it do it and never do anything? Stay where I'm at and never grow. So let's not be like Moses, even though we're going to be like Moses. God's going to ask you to do things. When you really get into a relationship with him, he's going to start giving you that nudge. That spirit inside you is going to nudge you. I'm not saying God's going to come to you in a burning bush or anything like that, but you're going to be led to do something. And sometimes it's going to be outside your comfort. 9 out of 10 is outside your comfort zone. Take that step. God's with us. So that is the message this morning. Are we building things up in our mind that really aren't that big and effective for being who we can be? So if this morning there's something in your life that's holding you back, there's that thing that's making you doubt. And it's hindering your relationship with God. Have the faith to step out, grow yourself, and build your relationship with God. I know we're all in here are in a relationship with God, or we've been thinking about what we've come to church a long time. But you know what I love about here is I know that we're going through things. I know there's things going on in your life because there's nobody walks out here and says, oh, my life's perfect. What's great is you can share that with your brothers and sisters here. I always love to offer up the invitation for somebody to come forward either to A, maybe it is time to accept your relationship with God. B, maybe it's something holding you back from your relationship with God. Who's better than to help you along than your brothers and sisters in this room? So whatever your needs may be, I encourage you to come forward. together.